Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Some of us wear our 10-gallon pins proudly, and others never think of going under the needle. When it comes to blood donations, very few of us give at the office, or anywhere else for that matter. Although 38% of the population is eligible to donate blood, only 3% actually do.
So what's involved in a blood donation? What happens to that blood afterwards? How much do they take? How is the blood screened? And what tests are administered to ensure every donation is safe? Here with the basics of blood donation is Dr. Patricia Prashada, Chief Medical Officer of the American Red Cross Blood Services Northeast Division. She's pursued a career in transfusion medicine and is board certified in the field as well as in blood banking. Welcome to Take Care. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
As we mentioned, a small percentage of people actually donate blood, and perhaps it's because they're not completely familiar with the process, and that's where we'd like to have your expertise. Can you just give us a basic explanation of the process, starting with how does a person find out if they even qualify to be a donor?
Okay, well, there actually is information on various websites for different blood collection facilities to find out about eligibility. But essentially, when a donor does come to a blood collection facility, the first thing that we really do is to do a pre-screening process. And one of the most important things, I think, is that we try to educate the donor. So when they come in to register, we actually give them a packet of information that tells them about what the process is going to be like, what it is like to be giving blood. And then we have some criteria in there in terms of medications that they may be on that may be important for us to know. So it starts with them coming into the registration, finding out some education about the blood process itself, and then we end up moving on to what we call a mini health history and physical for the donor. It's at this point that we can really get into more whether or not the donor is truly eligible. And at this point, we're looking for things to make sure that the donation is safe for the donor, as well as for the blood being safe for our patients. So the donor will go through a mini physical, which is the temperature, a heart rate, a blood pressure, and we do a finger stick hemoglobin to make sure that they meet the criteria for donating. So that's the beginning of the process. If they've passed all of that, then we go on to ask them a series of health history questions, and this is all done confidentially. And it's about almost 50 questions that they're being asked, and some of these questions are really to make sure that the donor themselves is healthy enough to donate, because we're concerned about the safety for the donor. And then again, some of these questions really relate to things in terms of the safety for the patient. So we want to know if they've been exposed to any potential transfusion-transmitted diseases that we may be concerned about.
It's understandable that there may be certain medical conditions or certain medications that one would take that would disqualify them. But are there common things that people may not have been aware of? Like, I've heard from individuals who've traveled to Great Britain during the mad cow disease era that they're ineligible. I've heard from other people that there's sort of like a quarantine once you've been tattooed. What are some of the most common things that people might not expect would disqualify them?
Well, you mentioned tattoo, and that's very interesting because if one does have a tattoo, it really depends on the state that they have a tattoo in. So if the tattoo parlors are regulated, they can have a tattoo and donate. But if they get a tattoo in a state where it's not regulated, they would have to wait 12 months from the time that they have that tattoo before they can donate. And you were right about the travel. We have a lot of travel deferrals, not only for, quote, the mad cow disease, but also if somebody should be traveling and travel through an area that may be endemic for malaria, then they would also have to be deferred for 12 months. So there are different deferrals for different reasons.
Assuming one qualifies to become a donor, how often can a person donate? And also, are there any age restrictions?
You're able to donate from the age of 17 on, unless some states do have laws where 16-year-olds can donate with parental consent. In terms of the other questions that you had, there is a weight restriction. You have to be at least 110 pounds. And we do have other weight restrictions depending on the type of donation that you may be doing. We have a whole blood donation, which is usually a 110-pound requirement, and we have different weight restrictions for some of our younger donors. And then if you are doing an apheresis procedure, which is actually removing a selective portion of your blood component where you may go onto a machine, there may be a higher weight restriction for that. So those are two things that are important to know.
So how much blood is actually taken at the time someone donates?
Well, when somebody donates, we take out approximately a pint of blood. If somebody was on an automated procedure, it may be a little bit more. So your question was, when can you donate a second time? If you donate a unit of whole blood, you have to wait 56 days before you can donate again. But if you go onto an apheresis machine and do a double red cell procedure, then you have to wait for 112 days before you can donate again.
What is the shelf life of the donated blood?
Well, each component has a different shelf life. And just so that you know, when we do take a unit of whole blood, we do spin it down and make it into different components. So one of the components is red cells. And red cells have to be stored in the refrigerator, and they're good for 42 days. The other thing that we take off of a unit of whole blood are platelets. And platelets, unlike red cells, are stored at room temperature, and they're only good for 5 days. So those have to be replenished very frequently. And the last thing that we usually tend to take off from a unit of whole blood is plasma. And the plasma is stored frozen, and that's good for a year.
Once we'll discuss the Red Cross, since that's what you represent. Once the Red Cross receives the blood, what does it do with it?
So once the unit is collected and it comes into the manufacturing site, if it's a whole blood unit, we will spin it down into the different components. Also, besides taking off a unit of whole blood from an individual, we're also taking off samples to go off to be tested for blood type and for different infectious disease markers. If everything is negative, then that unit will be labeled and will be ready for distribution to hospitals. So we will separate them into red cells, platelets, plasma. Once the testing is all done and everything is okay, then those units can be labeled and off and distributed to the hospitals.
Yes, I did have a question about what testing you do of the blood once someone's donated it. So when they get a physical history and they fill out the questionnaire, you mentioned that was about 50 questions. Is that all on the honor system? And do you have any follow-up things you do to the blood just to make sure you're screening out for things that maybe the person really genuinely doesn't know they carry?
Exactly.
In the blood, yeah.
Yes, we do. We do. And it is all on the honor system. We expect, you know, donors to answer the questions honestly. And what we do test for the hepatitis B and C. We test for human immunodeficiency virus or the AIDS virus. We test for syphilis, human T-cell lymphotropic virus, West Nile virus, and we also test for Chagas. And all of these, we are under the regulation of the FDA, so we are really we're following the guidelines of what needs to be tested on these units. You're right that sometimes individuals may not remember that they have traveled somewhere. So once somebody has donated and we make sure that they're okay and they've left, we always give them a number that they can call back because they may think, oh, my gosh, I forgot to tell somebody that, yes, indeed, I had traveled within the past year. And so they can always call back and give us information if they had forgotten to say something at the time of the donation.
You're testing for some conditions that actually are quite serious if it's discovered that that is indeed something that the donor has and doesn't realize. How do you convey this information back?
So if a donor is positive, we do inform the donor. We will usually send information about the test that was done, what that test means. And we will also have counselors if they need to speak with somebody, as well as having information if they want to send anything to their physician. So we will inform them if they have a positive test.
One last question. Can a family member donate blood to be used for their relative if they have the same blood type? Let's say, you know, a family member is going in for a big operation and they just want to make sure they have blood in case it's needed. Do they have anything set up where one family member can donate with a specific desire to have it go to a specific person rather than the general pool of blood?
That is considered a directed donation, and there are some. You can probably do a directed donation. The donor has to go through all of the same process as anybody else does. So they will go through the same kind of health history and all the testing. It can be set up that it can go possibly back to that individual's family member. There are things that we have to do. There are some other concerns once you're doing that, because if it is a family member, we may have to do some other processes because there's higher risk of some other complications. So it's just something that people should be aware of.
Dr. Patricia Pichotta is Chief Medical Officer of the American Red Cross Blood Services Northeast Division. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.